Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
So a few days ago, I saw a drawing by a teenager who had been asked to draw how she saw her own future. And it was a complex piece with a background representing elements of her identity. And at the center, there was a scale. On the left side, against the green background, there was a dollar sign. On the right side, against the red background, there was the outline of a heart. It looked like the future for her was about balancing the demands of society with the things that simply make our hearts happy. When I was a young adult, I wouldn't have accepted such a sharp opposition between these two things. I mostly believed that I was very lucky to love my work so much, that profession, passion, personal life could naturally align for me. By the time I found Zen practice, I was in my late 30s. I was 37. Some mildly painful events had piled up. Leaving my home country for a better job, feeling stressed and lonely, and eventually burning out. At that point, if I had to draw my future, which I didn't, it would have looked a lot like that teenager scale, trying to balance happiness driven by the heart with the demands of society. Practicing here at Canando would have landed firmly in the heart side of the scale. It was for 4 years that I practiced daily at Canando. Our teacher Les was always just a few steps away, sharing his example and presence. The hours that I spent at Canando with you, with some of you, and other ones like you, with like-minded people, touched my heart, because I felt a sense of community, peacefulness, and care in every gesture during the practice at Canando. As soon as I experienced this different way of living, of being together. I don't know how to say. Just this different way. I wanted to drop out of the exhausting balancing act altogether. It seemed to me I should simply let go of that green dollar camps entirely. Isn't that what monks and priests do? Leave the conventions of society behind. Over the following years, I have explored this question in my own way, bringing my usual mix of energy, persistence, decision making, and overthinking. Sometimes overthinking in the process. I also kept carefully studying and reflecting on the example on the life of our teacherless. We don't drop out, he said firmly. He never seemed to have dropped out of his job, family life, or responsibilities. So the question I had remained puzzling for me. Looking back now, and it's 12 years later. It's 12 years that I left California. I realize just how much that green dollar sign was actually inside me, inside my heart, in those years of practice. I only very slowly became aware of how much I liked it when things went well for me at work or in the eyes of the society. I was dependent on positive feedback. And on feeling like I fit in. I hardly noticed. I kept seeking more engagement in areas of my life that clashed with some of my deeper values. For instance, it was a time my career, I was taking on managerial responsibilities at work while still telling myself I wanted out, I wanted to leave the rat race behind. Or, for example, I used to check the company's stock value multiple times a day, mindlessly, doing what everyone else did. Then, in my fourth year of practice at Canandō, Zen and family life came somehow into conflict. It wasn't the practice that changed. We had a child, and I felt a strong desire to raise him closer to our families in Europe. So I learned that even the pursuit of my heart in the red camp, in the red right camp, can come into conflict with one another. In our practice, we try to acknowledge one another in a universal sense without judging each other's choices, each other's identities. Les once said that saving all beings means I will save everyone without judgment. You know, the saving all beings of the morning gather. When we don't praise, when we don't praise or criticize each other based on our identities or choices, we are offering each other a chance to free ourselves from a limited identity. So when I ask Les anxiously about moving away, he answered simply, "Of course, I'll remain your teacher." On my side, I managed to convince myself that my practice wouldn't be affected by leaving my teacher and my Sangha, even though I knew that our tradition emphasizes this need for an in-person relationship, an in-person presence, for intimacy between teacher and a student to continue until the student realizes the way. And you know, in this age of Zoom calls, it is easy to be confused about this, about the importance of in-person practice. Over the last 12 years, I've had plenty of time to think on what I seek in my teacher and in our relationship. From a practical standpoint, psychologically, if you want, and spiritually. True to my old habit, I've invested a lot of energy, consistency, decisiveness, and plenty of thinking or overthinking into these questions. I won't bother you with the list of things that I tried to maintain a practice as if I was there kind of with you and with less. Because as if is just as if, you know, and it's not the real, it's not real. Instead, I'd like to tell you something more about what still escapes me. And Les, I'm sorry I'm talking about you again. For example, have you noticed how quickly Les responds to an email? Or how ready he is to fix something around the temple, you know, when he was there, or step up to do whatever is needed in a given situation. I never see an hesitation in him. He can be thoughtful or reflective and reflective. He might wait before answering a question or pause during a Dharma talk, but I don't sense the same kind of hesitation that I always feel in myself. And I wonder, is that just, a different in personality? Or is it a sign of someone working without self-concern, always clear about his purpose? There are Buddhist traditions that talk about special powers of their teachers, of the teachers, or realized beings. In Zen, we are more like the old Theravada tradition. Everyone is a normal human being, including Shakyamuni Buddha and our lineage of teachers. The only special powers our teachers have are in performing our ceremonies, the ceremonies they perform for us. I've been into several ceremonies with Les and the Kanando Sangha, mostly ordinations, including my own, and last year, less stepping down ceremony. My ordination ceremony truly changed the course of my life, and its effects are still unfolding or still present, which is something that feels almost magical. Every time I put on my robes or bow on my mat, I feel the impact of that ceremony from 13 years ago. It's also the reason why I'm standing here in front of you today. Since less stepping down ceremony, I've realized I won't have the chance to perform other ceremonies with him or to train with him as Shuso. This is also a consequence of my decision to leave Kanon-do so long ago. At that ceremony last year, I heard Les, you all heard Les mention that he practiced with Suzuki Roshi for only about a year. Another time, he told me that Suzuki Roshi fell ill before Les' planned Shuso period, so Les couldn't train closely with him for the 3 months as he had so much hoped for. When I heard these things, I feel for Les. He too has had to find his own way forward in our practice. This gateless gate. Recently, I asked Les if we could put together some of his past Dharma talks into a new book. People here in Italy, where I live, asked me for teachings to go with our weekly sittings. So we assembled a book that has the same taste as the talks I heard in person at Canondo. Talks that shaped my practice. If all goes as planned, the book will launch on Amazon and other distribution channels on June 24th next year. Most of the stories in it are about Suzuki Roshi, of course, less teacher. These stories strike me. They are sublime. They come from first-hand experience, personally lived moments, and personally transmitted teachings. In the entire book, there is no external principle of truth, no religious authority, no science, no philosophy, no historical sources that are invoked. The kind of direct personal transmission is a rare thing nowadays. Recently, during a question and answer after a lecture, I heard less, maybe it was last year sometime, I heard less say something that caught my attention. He said, "I had a good teacher," referring to Suzuki Roshi. On its own, that sentence could be misunderstood. Could be misunderstood even as cocky and seem out of character. But it's actually the title we chose for the book. I had a good teacher. Less that time, if I remember well, said something like, "I had a good teacher. He never gave me direct instructions on what to do." He just let me discover things by myself, allowing me to observe him closely, up close. At one point, for instance, on this note, at one point in the new book, Les writes, "You don't need to say anything. When we meet people like this, we can try to help them come alive. The best Zen teachers always taught this way. They don't explain. They simply invite you to practice. The invitation might even be silent." You might think that writing a book about Zen while keeping that attitude would be difficult. But this book, this new book, seems to me to capture that silent quality, observing quality quite well. So I hope that you will have a chance to read Les' new book, I Had a Good Teacher, soon. Thank you. if there are questions or comments.
I disagree. I just wanted to say thank you so much for shepherding this project through to completion. I'm so happy to hear that it's coming out soon, and I know that you put a lot of work into it, so thank you.
Thank you, Lee. Are you still our president?
Oh, no. No, Dan is our president now.
Okay, so, but you've been the president who has approved the contract with the publisher for the book. So thank you very much. The book is also another interesting aspect. Les has decided that it's going to be a Canon Do book. So the rights, the copyright is in Canon Do name. And you know, the board of Canon Do will manage that. So it's our book.
Giuseppe, this is Dan.
Hi, Dan.
And nice to see you, and thanks for the talk and all the work you've done on the book. When it launches, will you be here? Can we do some event around it? Or Les, would you join us here? It would be great to take part in the introduction of this book. We'll think about that. Thank you very much.
Dan, when I used to work in Silicon Valley, when I heard things like you said, I would say, I like the way you think.
Right.
We'll do something. Absolutely, it's important. Yes, I have some flexibility. I will try to come over or do something.
I also have a question, Giuseppe. So this issue of having a direct teacher, and yet you don't have one face-to-face live now, you know, in person, how do you think of this need for a teacher, or in Les's case, Les had Suzuki Roshi for a year and then did the rest probably largely on his own. I don't know that, but how do you think of that need for a teacher and your own independence and learning on your own, you know, without a in-person teacher?
Thank you for the question. It's a very perceiving question, you know. It's the question that was probably motivating some parts of my talk. So we have, as usual, two types of problems in life. The problems we know how to solve, which are not even problems in some sense, and the problems that we don't know how to solve. I don't know, you know, how things will develop. You know, the example of someone can only go so far. Less has studied or continuously with a teacher, with other teachers. After Suzuki Roshi died, build a relationship eventually with the Oitsu. So that you've seen a relationship that has lasted 50 plus years. So that was his path. And I don't know what mine is going to be. But I'm trying. Not to just pretend there is not an issue, because I don't know how to solve it. Okay, so that's my answer. Thank you. I do think it's very important, the in-person relationship. And I'm an expert now of practicing on my own and all the pitfalls, because we tend to just not see a part of ourselves. It's very important, the relationships we have, to learn from each other. And so, you know, best advice less gave me over these years has been to share my practice, not to hide it in the closet, to practice with other people, even if I'm not a teacher, but anyway, offer the practice and do it with other people. And that has proved to me very helpful, because it's a way of seeing things more clearly through our relationships. Thank you. Teresa, if you were not going to ask a question, I would have asked you a question.
I actually don't have a question, but I wanted to say the same as Lee said. Thank you very much for, well, first of all, I love the title of the book. And then I wanted to say thank you very much for your vision and energy to bring this book to completion. And I love your talk tonight. As you can imagine, a lot of the things you said resonate with me, being also far away and having some of the challenges that you faced. So thank you.
And do you know that you have behind you on the right side the outline of a heart?
Yeah, I will.
It's quite in tune.
So are you planning a visit to us in 2025?
Yes, I don't have the dates, but for sure I will come next year. Thank you, and it would be a pleasure.
May I ask, Giuseppe, how is your Zendo going? I don't know if you could hear me.
Okay.
May I ask, how is your little Zendo going, your little group?
The main change is here. School year starting from September, which is always there is always a gap in August here in Italy because the hot summer, it's just too hot for anything. And since September, we have started or restarted Wednesday evening meeting. So we meet not only on Saturday morning now, but also on Wednesday at 8 p.m. For Zazen and tea one time, and then the next week we meet for Zazen, a lecture with questions and answer or discussion. And so since September, we've gone through the Italian translation of the first four lectures of the new book. So I put the new book to its original purpose for me, the purpose that got it started, so to speak. And it's so there are three people who had asked me over time, already some years ago, for a evening appointment, because they were not morning persons. On Saturday we do the morning practice from 6 a.m. you know, in person till 8:30. And then we have online or Zazen morning. Morning Zazen at 6 a.m., but nothing in a decent hour. So from this year, we have this evening meeting. It's going well. And we are developing a common language through the talks, listening through talks, and we are noticing. We are starting to practice with stopping the Q&A and discussion part, because we noticed we have difficulties as a group to do that. And the thinking grows like brambles, and then we don't know how to get out of it. We are discussing, it's a couple of times that we say, oh, we should just get the machete and cut down this bramble now and go for some tea. Thank you for asking.
Hi, Giuseppe. Thank you for your talk. You made a good point about learning through observing and practicing with other people. I think we start practice wanting to devour all the books and get all the intellectual learning and figure it out. And
And then after a while, you realize it's really about sitting. And it's only when I practice with other people that I keep running into myself and my own habits and my own shortcomings, faults. And I think it's important because we get to know ourselves better, and that's what practice is about, is getting to know ourselves. And I also appreciate that over the years, you know, I knew, or I found out I was doing certain things incorrectly, and Les would never, you know, correct me or say, that's not the way you do it. I just eventually, through observing and watching and seeing, thought, oh my gosh, I've been doing that not like everyone else is doing it, or I'm not doing it correctly. So I really appreciate you bringing that out in your talk, and I appreciate Les for his style of teaching. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane, for your comment. Practicing together, we also learn, get to know each other. So it's not only getting to know oneself, but know how each of us is, and that's very nice. It creates a very nice atmosphere, Kananda. When it works, we know that how we are. To us. I regarding your point about correcting practice, not correcting practice, or I think the temptation is strong to think, do I learn quicker if I get Do I learn quicker if I get a lot of feedback or something like that? And we do learn slowly, you know. We do learn slowly about the important things. But the things that maybe are very simply set in our mind since, say, our teenager years, we learn very slowly to be aware of those things. But probably there is no short cut. That process.
Yeah, thank you.
This talk was brought to you by the Kanando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to kanando.org. That's KANNON.org.